morning. Welcome to the Nebraska Court of Appeals. This is our March session in Lincoln. My name is Rhett Inbody, and I'm from Wahoo, Nebraska, and I'll be the presiding judge today. I'm pleased to be joined by Francie Reedman on my left from Gretna, Nebraska, and Rico Bishop on my right from Lincoln, Nebraska. When I call your case, I'll ask the lawyers to come forward, and then I'll call your case again for a second time. And the reason for that is we are video recording and also audio recording the proceedings. It makes it easier for us to find the cases if we want to go back and listen to them at some time in the future. Also, since this is being streamed live across the state, if you have any issues that involve children or some sorts of sensitive items, you may want to restrict how you refer to it. I'll leave that up to your discretion, but I simply want to point that out. And once it goes out, we can't get it back. With that in mind, we'll call the first case of the morning, Crossman and Hosford versus Modera. The first case this morning is Crossman and Hosford versus Modera. Counsel, whenever you're ready.
Well, good morning, Justices, Chief Justice, opposing counsel. May it please the court. My name is Oliver Jenkins, and I represent the appellant in this matter, Jeannie Modera. And my client is seeking relief from the district court's judgment mandate affirming the county court's summary judgment. granting of summary judgment in favor of the appellee, Crossman and Hosford. The facts of this case are relatively straightforward. Crossman and Hosford is a law firm in Omaha, Nebraska. Jeannie Modera is an individual located in Omaha, Nebraska. Mr. Hosford, an attorney, submitted some statements to Jeannie Modera, a summary of activity he had done in representation of two entities, American Marking Corporation and another entity, JM and JM.
Did it reflect the dates of the service of the attorney?
It did not. The invoices submitted were basically just a summary of services that he had performed. They did not have any dates, specific dates or times that, that they were performed, and it was not itemized. It was one lump sum.
Is it my understanding that it was over approximate 5-year period?
That is correct, Your Honor. Initially, there was no response from my client regarding the matter. Eventually, my client did respond, saying a little flabbergasted at the amount, not sure what was going on, and said, hopefully I can pay you something, rather vague about it. And then several more months, I believe, went by, and then a check, personal check.
It was a couple weeks.
Couple weeks, thank you. A personal check was sent by Jeannie Modera to Crossman and Hosford, and then I think it was another several months before another check.
So what is the effect of those two $500 checks that your client sent?
Well, Your Honor, I think what it is it's evidence showing that there was confusion as to what was going on. Crossman and Hosford states that their claim on an account stated. Now, there's three elements based upon case law for an account stated, and those elements are that the parties had previously conducted a series of transactions.
Okay. Do you dispute that?
Yes.
Because of the parties?
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
The parties in the complaint and the parties in the statements and the parties in, in Mr. Hosford's affidavits are different parties. The statements are the parties of Crossman and Hosford and the two entities, American Marking and JM, and the complaint, and in Mr. Hosford's affidavit, he says states and sets forward that he did legal services for Jeannie Modrow. But there's no statements for Jeannie Modrow. Second element is that a balance was due as a result of previous transactions. And then the third element is that an agreement was reached between the parties on that amount.
So let's break those apart. We talked about the first one. Mm-hmm. The second one, that a balance is due. Your client doesn't dispute that a balance is due, correct?
My client doesn't dispute that a balance is due, correct.
Okay.
There may be a dispute that what that balance is. But
and isn't that the third
correct.
Factor?
Correct.
Okay, so for our purposes, we're evaluating the first factor and the third factor, correct?
You're correct, Your Honor, yes. So with regards to the third element, an agreement reached between the parties on the amount due, I believe, going back to your question about the two payments, I believe that is evidence of a confusion as to what the amount is due and who is owing it.
But the checks came from your client personally, correct?
Correct, Your Honor.
And at the time she made those two payments, she had not yet expressed any confusion as to the entity that was being charged. Is that right?
She had expressed some. She had inquired into Mr. Hosford what exactly the dates these services were performed, and she did not recall some of these services performed being performed. Part of the problem here, Your Honor, is that at the time that the statements were submitted to Jeannie Modrow, the vague or the summarized statements of the work performed, Jeannie Modrow was not a principal or an agent. There's no evidence that she was a principal or an agent of the company at the time that these services were performed, so there's no evidence that she would have had actual knowledge of these services being performed.
So why did she pay on it?
Your Honor, I think that she paid because, again, if we take a step back here for one moment, I think the evidence here clearly shows that there is a disclosed agency partnership officer corporation relationship here. I don't think Mr. Hosford would have sent them personally to Jeannie Modrow with statements claiming that services were performed for these entities if there wasn't some sort of, if we can't infer that there was some sort of agency principal or I am the officer director of these corporations. So Ms. Modrow, not being a sophisticated person because her husband had previously run the businesses and he had passed away, felt obligated to, I believe, pay. I mean, she felt obligated to pay. She doesn't dispute that there may be some balance due. I think the confusion is where these monies should be coming out of. She paid them out of her personal account. I don't think I don't think that's necessarily dispositive of this case. I think it just shows that there's maybe some confusion as to where these funds should be coming from. At the very least, we have evidence that she is an officer or director of these entities, and that has been disclosed, we can at least strongly infer that that is known to Mr. Hosford, and that in that instance, Ms. Modrow would not be liable, personally liable, for these debts.
So your position is that there's at least some fact issues here that would preclude summary judgment?
Yes, Your Honor. I think there's genuine issues of material fact that permeate throughout this case. One is obviously, first and foremost, whether Jeannie Modrow is the proper party. I mean, does the court even have jurisdiction over this if the transactions aren't even between Crossman and Hosford and Jeannie Modrow? There's no indication and no evidence to suggest that the transactions happened between these parties.
Did you file a motion to dismiss for lack of jurisdiction?
We did not file a motion to dismiss for lack of jurisdiction. We did argue proper parties at the summary judgment in front of the county court, and I believe we brought it up also in the various appeals to the district court. It went up twice to the district court. And as you are aware, jurisdictional matters cannot be waived and be raised at any time. Any other questions?
No questions at this time.
I would just like to wrap up by saying that, again, Justices, there are genuine issues of material fact that permeate throughout this case. One is being the parties, the proper parties. One is whether that the parties had previously conducted a series of transactions. And third, whether there was an agreement, a mutual meeting of the minds between the parties of what this balance was due and for what it was for.
Just one question. Implied consent is sufficient for establishing an account stated, correct? It doesn't have to be expressed. It can be implied according to case law. Would you agree with that?
Yes, okay. In some instances, yes.
Okay. So can we not find implied consent based upon the fact that your client did make two payments before even raising the issue of I'm not the person individually liable for these, and two, the fact that it took 13 months for her to raise that issue?
Well, I think you have a difficulty with implied consent considering that there was not a complete understanding of what she was agreeing to. I think Bingman is a perfect case, which I have cited, in which Bingman was approached by a person who says, hey, you owe this money.
But Bingman didn't even have a dollar amount, as I recall.
Well, I believe there was there was some dollar amount, but there was no itemized statement. Whereas in another case cited, John Deere, there was a series of negotiations back and forth between the parties, and by the time there was a summarized statement of what was owed, the parties knew what was owed, and everything had been gone through, all the items had been thoroughly gone through, and each party knew exactly where each party stood. In Bingman, there was a summarized statement, there wasn't anything itemized, and he did make some payments, and he said, I promise to pay it, and I'll get you the money when I have the money, but the court still found that there was no mutual meeting of the mind in Bingman. So I think that Bingman is very controlling in this case because the facts are very similar. And with that, I appreciate your time. Thank you.
How much time are we taking over? Would you please add that to the at least? Counsel, good morning.
Morning.
Whenever you're ready.
Don Hosford appearing for the appellee. This case before the court is a case on an account stated. It's not a case for an account rendered. It's not an attempt to collect a billing statement. Typically, on an account stated, the creditor is going to submit a statement, a document, to the debtor. The debtor will have a period of time in which to review that, and then if the debtor agrees to the statement, it becomes an account stated between the two parties. And at that point, it becomes a separate and new contract between those parties. In this case, I think the justices know this, but I will go over it, please. In March of 2012, statements were starting to be submitted to the debtor.
And those statements were narrative. They didn't any dates as to when services
That's
were
correct.
Performed, correct?
That is correct.
It's not the typical itemized statement that we see from attorneys. This is how much I charge per hour. This is how much the task, how much time it took me. This is the task I actually did, and this is the unit price for it. We didn't see that on these.
That is correct. We did not. That statement was then sent monthly thereafter in April, May, and June, and July of that year 2012. And then in the end of July of that same year, the debtor, the appellant, sends an email to the appellee and says, Don, I'm sorry that I haven't gotten back to you sooner. As I have previously indicated, and there were previous conversations.
None of which are in our records,
correct? That's correct. They are just verbal conversations. As I have previously indicated, it will be difficult to pay for your services and admission of services all at once. I was taken aback to receive such a large bill spanning several years. No complaint about detail or about what was done or about any question of transactional history between the two parties. I was just taken aback to receive a large bill spanning several years. A check for $500 will be sent in the next couple of weeks. I hope this will be meaningful to you. Thank you for your patience, Jeannie. We had
prior to that note, is there anything in any of your statements that shows that she was the client?
Sending the bill to her. She is the person to whom I rendered the services, which she knew full well, based on the conversations had and based on this email.
Well,
she's acknowledging.
In her affidavit, she states that she was that some of those services were performed.
This comes quite belated, and it's very convenient to make that statement.
Well, Mr. Hosford, your bill was quite belated. It was almost 5 years after the service.
But it was an ongoing thing, a continuing bill, rendering services ongoing, which she knew full well.
Is there any evidence of that?
I think the evidence is circumstantial. She has no complaint about anything.
And it was an ongoing bill that accumulated over a period of time because your bill doesn't show when the services were provided.
She had no complaint about any of it. She knew full well.
I'm not asking you whether she had a complaint about it. I'm asking you if it showed it.
No, it does not show it, sir.
I mean, we have to look at the record, don't we?
Sure.
And we can't go into her mind as to what she thinks.
But I think you can infer what she thinks from what she does.
And you can't infer from what her affidavit says.
Her affidavit comes quite belated. She sent two checks in payment on the account, which she acknowledged prior to that time. She knew full well what had been done between us.
Felt that the fee was...
If she wanted...
I felt the fee was too much.
Yes. She didn't say that.
Well, she said that. I was taken aback.
A large bill spanning several years. Didn't say that the amount was too much, but it's a large bill spanning several years. Coming in at an abrupt point in time. I agree to all that. I acknowledge that those are all facts.
So you don't think there's a factual issue here as to whether or not she agreed to pay the amount that you submitted?
No. She sent a check in August of 2012, and then she received continual monthly bills thereafter, detailing all of this and crediting the first check, and then voluntarily sends a second check in December of the same year.
So it's your position that those checks represent an express agreement or consent that the bill is correct?
Yes. Acknowledgement of the account between us. What else am I to do? She doesn't ask for anything further from me.
Well, here's my problem. You wait 5 years, almost, to bill her for service. You wait. Typically, we see monthly statements, even in continuing services, where there's no fee agreement between the parties, whoever those parties might be. So you wait 5 years. You do some services almost 5 years earlier. You don't bill her for those until, I understand what you're saying, the work is completed. And she waits 13 months before she writes that letter that says, I have concerns about the amount of the bill. And you want us to find 13 months is too late, but 5 years we should disregard?
13 months is not too late, but it became an account stated prior to that. It becomes a new contract between the two parties because she acknowledged the account stated.
Only if we find there is either an implied or an express assent to its correctness. Is that not a question of fact, given her statement that she's taken aback?
There's no refutation of the evidence. It's clear that she received these repeated bills. It's clear that she sent this email. She didn't ask for anything further from me. She was acknowledging that we had this transactional history. She got a big bill. She couldn't pay it all at once, but she sent a check in payment. She acknowledges that there's a transactional history. She doesn't register any complaint.
There is something else you'd like to say?
Sure. Well, I guess we've gone through the history. I think because it's an account stated, then the issues that are being brought up are not pertinent to that, because it's not an account rendered, it's an account stated. So to talk about the reasonableness of the attorney fees or the statute of limitations as it pertains to an account rendered or the understanding which she may have had on the account or whether the parties are incorrect or correct, because she's acknowledging that she is the party. She's making a payment out of her personal checking account on this account. Those are all irrelevant issues, I think, I report to the court. So it's a motion for summary judgment. The district court has affirmed the county court's judgment. The district court particularly found that there was no argument of mistake or of any fraud involved here. And based on that, I think the appellate court should affirm the decision of the district court. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yes, sir.
You may step back. I believe the appellant is out of time. Very well. We'll deem the matter submitted, and counsel are excused. Thank you.